Welcome to episode 60 of the Strong Style Story Podcast here at the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I am your host, Selector Jeffrey Wessel. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. With me, of course, you know, the co-host, co-founder, co-OG, co-producer, Chris Damasceno. Chris, how you doing, brother?
A lot of co's, but yes, I'm doing great. Nice to be back here for a Strong Style Story, finally after a couple weeks of the layoff. Tons of things have happened. It is basically the most wonderful time of the year at this juncture for New Japan Pro Wrestling, where the hype fully begins and we get to kind of stew on 2 weeks' worth of said hype until the events, the two-night event this year around, which is going to be January 4th and January 5th.
And of course, if you're listening to this, this is side A of the program, because not only is this our massive Wrestle Kingdom 14 preview, but episode 60, being a landmark episode in of itself, is also our fourth anniversary. And most of our anniversary content is going to be on the side B. So, because, you know, as you know, newer listeners may not know, typically if we know we're going to go over 2 hours, which we undoubtedly will with this, we tend to split these episodes up, because I know what it's like trying to listen to longer podcasts. I know some shows on this network do longer episodes. I just know personally myself, once it starts hitting the 2 hour mark, I'm like, yeah, no, I gotta bail, you know?
Yeah, and taking it in chunks like that, it's never a bad idea in any way, shape, or form. You can take your time with it, take a particular day where you can listen to side A, eventually go to side B whenever you feel like it. Just, you know, small things like that.
Yeah, but all that being said, we a lot's happened since we last talked. One of which, of course, I'm going to fully admit, I really was not paying attention all that much beyond what I had to write the blog for the World Tag League, because I know there was some great things going on with Kenta's promos, and it seemed like it was a pretty wild tournament overall. But, you know, ultimately, yeah, the last few years have been really inconsequential with the tournament. I think they, you know, with what I saw, they kind of overcame that this year.
Yeah, it seems like this year, from what little I did see and heard from, they did try to do a little bit more on the intrigue side of the fence with the World Tag League, where they had four teams at a certain point being at that position where they could have been the winners by the final night and having enough scenarios to play along with that. So that was cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was like the obvious teams weren't going to make it were, like, you know, the old Fighting Club G-Eggs team of Nagata and Nakanishi, you know, Tenkoji, Start Strong, but of course they're going to taper off, you know, things like that. I was a little disappointed that Shingo and Terrible did not get a little more love.
Yeah, because it seems like they meshed really well eventually after a couple matches together, so was kind of unfortunate that it didn't pay off the way that we would have liked it.
Yeah, of course, we will point out that, you know, Terrible is now the only member of Los Ingobernables actually still with CMLL.
Yeah, we can touch on that a little bit more, because there's some stuff that happened on that forefront over the past few weeks, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, believe me, we have a lot happening here. In the end, after three grueling weeks, we had the winners of the World Tag League. It was a first time set of winners.
Yes.
Beating the winners that were going for a three-peat in Evil and Sonata. But no, Juice Robinson and the return David Finley are your winners.
And really, what a good moment for the both of them, especially for Finley, given that he's had that shoulder injury that he's been battling for so long and that he just came back from a couple of months ago. And then him and Juice having a moment like that and having all the rest of the Hantai coming together to celebrate with them at the end, too, was a really sweet touch as well.
Yeah, the rest of the Sekigun were there for them. And also, David Finley was gone most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will say this, it's good, and this leads to something really interesting for Wrestle Kingdom that we'll talk about as we get to that actual preview. But, congratulations to Juice Robinson and David Finlay. I hope they do right by Juice, because they have just been starting and stopping with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's been infuriating, and some of it has been out of their control, like the whole thing with with Typhoon Hagibis.
Yeah, messing things up.
Mm-hmm. Messing things up. But you know, we're gonna see whether or not they go through this. Let's talk about that final the Tag League final show, because
some stuff to unpack there. Mm-hmm.
First of all, yes. The thing that got messed up because of Typhoon Hagibis, well, it's being corrected because we had the return of John freaking Moxley.
And again, for those who hear us at Boom Goes the Dynamite, you already know we've been gushing about Moxley for weeks, and rightfully so, and this was no different. Especially when the first thing he does is literally walk up to the center of the ring, drop Lance Archer with Death Rider, and then do the same to Minoru Suzuki seconds later without so much as a thought.
He hit Minoru Suzuki with Death Rider. This is, you know, on Boom Goes the Dynamite, we constantly are making comparisons between John Moxley and peak Stone Cold Steve Austin. This is why.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Just having that semblance of an attitude where you'll just drop anyone and anything regardless of whatever reputation you might have.
20 years ago, that was a Stone Cold Stunner, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, you know, which is interesting because we have also spoken before about how Moxley's character in New Japan was slightly different than his character in AEW. And this is going to come up again with somebody else as we mm-hmm. get to the Wrestle Kingdom preview. But yeah. This time he was this was AEW Moxley all through and through. There was no, you know, joking and you know, Shota's gone. He's on excursion. So we don't have his interactions with Shooter.
Mm-hmm.
To go on, so now he's just reverted to AEW, you know, Lone Wolf Moxley, you know.
Which, yeah, I can understand the attitude towards that, just as a means of going, hey, well, he's my young lion basically isn't here, and I've got some business to take care of, so I'm going to be all business about it.
Which is again, it's fine. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, something like Lance Archer and Minoru Suzuki, yeah, go ahead, do the AEW Moxley shtick, you know?
Mm-hmm. It is a facet of himself. It's basically the simplest way of putting it, just as the kind of playful, somewhat goofy side at times with the Shota interactions is as well. And that's a good thing, to have different layers and beats that you can go into, just because it gives you depth as an overall character. You're not like painting yourself in a corner, if you will.
Yeah. But, you know, so now we have a match made at Wrestle Kingdom, which we will preview here in a little bit. But that wasn't the only, that was one of the only things that happened. Two video messages came up as well. The mm-hmm. first one was against Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Yep.
You know, and this was not Le Champion, little bit of the bubbly Jericho. This is New Japan Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
Where he is
Painmaker.
This is Painmaker Jericho. This is, you know, Lone Psychopath Jericho
mm-hmm.
that he's become in New Japan. You know, he doesn't participate in series tag matches. He doesn't do any of that shit. He's, you know, You know, he is what he is. I mean, he's a guy who disguised himself as Bushi and pulled a gusher on Naito, you know?
Yeah, definitely so. You have a lot of those different aspects there. And I like it. It makes, again, for having those differences, it makes for just, again, the character depth. And I think it makes for a good style matchup as well for what we're going to see this Wrestle Kingdom around, which we'll preview as well coming up
Yeah,
here.
I mean, like I said, I mean, yeah, there's obvious. I mean, obviously, you know, let's face it, AEW Jericho is still trying to do like a more pronounced version of his old WCW shtick. You know,
Which is fair,
he's
yeah.
a heel comedian. You know, he says dumb shit. He gets, you know, flummoxed. You know, Looney Tunes style. You know, with duck season, wabbit season turnarounds. You know, he'll get flummoxed with that. In New Japan, that's not the case. Like, you know, it's like, you know, he turned it around, you know, like even though it was a bad match, but he turned it around at Dominion, where he actually managed to get one of his catchphrases in because he likes to call people stupid idiots. Well, what do you call Tanahashi?
Yeah, just go ahead, call him full-fledged Bakahashi, which phenomenal play on the name
Yeah,
itself.
I mean, he knows his different characters, and I mean, and now the video that you showed that was shown, yes, it's playing into the zeitgeist because of the Joker movie that came out, but I mean, it worked. And you know, this time he wasn't screaming; he was actually whispering. You know, he was wh
Yeah.
whispering "Sayonara." You know.
And along with that too, it's something that even that particular character, something we've been seeing over the past year, long before getting into the Joker movie itself, kind of making headways the way that it's done within modern media and stuff. So
Yeah, I mean he was doing yeah, I mean he was doing
it's
that
still
when he
different, but yeah.
yeah, he was doing that when he did the boot, you know, when he disguised himself as Bushi, you know.
So yeah, it's still different, but at this in the same vein, it's still been a blast to kind of see this bit of development coming from him and to see what we're eventually going to be getting in within the next 2 weeks from
Yep.
that.
But
So
that was not the only video That was not the only video appearance we had. We had a special appearance on video challenging Jushin Liger for his final match. It was none other than Dragon Lee, now Ryu Lee,
yeah,
because
and
Ryu means, by the way, means dragon.
It's just a nice workaround considering what happened with that particular trademark from what we discussed in the last episode. So,
Well, it wasn't the last episode. It was several episodes ago. But yeah, I mean, it's yeah. By all accounts, yeah, a 1 year deal has been reached, kind of more or less behind CMLL's back by New Japan. I'm just gonna warn you. I kind of knew about this a month ago, and I think you know how. I'm not gonna give away my sources. But let's just say that this source kind of lives close to me. So yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
But so yeah, so now we, you know, now Dragon or Ryu Lee, however you want to call him, he is apparently this 1 year deal is a done 1 year contract's a done deal, and he will be part of New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I couldn't be happier
Yeah, definitely
because
so.
all signs were pointing that this was not going to happen.
Yeah, we were afraid for a little while. There is like just yeah, that's the window that closed because of circumstances that, Mexico being Mexico, I guess.
Well,
So.
Mexico being Mexico, New Japan seemingly wanting to maintain the relationship with CMLL, which that's something we're definitely going to discuss on side B, is that part. But yeah, but I mean, apparently, again, they went behind their back, they went behind CMLL's back and signed him anyway. And let's face it, I think we all know who has leverage in this relationship.
Yeah, 100%.
So, Ryu Lee will be part of Wrestle Kingdom, as we'll discuss here shortly. But You want to quickly go over the year-end shows?
Yeah, we can
the
do that.
The Tokyo Domes. I mean, they were
yeah.
all. I mean, they were all. You know, it's all build-up tag match sort of things.
Yeah, definitely so. But a lot of fun things there. I definitely would recommend night one for not only just the fact that it was Hiromu's return match, but just.
Yeah.
Very, very good stuff. The Birds of Prey versus Los Dos Peligrosos turned out really well. Had a really interesting finish as well, which I think will build into some future stuff for 2020 as well. I think anyone who's listened to this podcast knows how high I am on Robbie Eagles. So it was really nice to see him pick up kind of a huge win in this match.
Yeah.
First night.
Oh,
so.
Although, you know what? Before we get into that, though, I forgot something we should talk about. Last week in my neck of the woods, I saw Minoru Suzuki.
Right,
and,
yeah. For Warrior
and, El Fantasmo and Brian and Lance Archer and, you know.
Brian
Pelley
Jr. was there.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you know, and, Osprey, Rocky, and Amazing Red.
Oh, yeah, right.
Acting against
match.
The Rascals. That match was fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It was great because the Rascals gave them absolutely no respect in the ring, so it worked. The Lucha five-man was great, too, although there was some fuckery involved with that as well.
Oh, goodness.
But, you know, in other fuckery news, unfortunately, I also had to put up with both Frank the Clown.
Oh, yeah, right, because he's been doing manager stuff over the last, like, few months.
Yeah,
I didn't remember that.
And Elgin. Elgin was there, and he tried to cut this, you know, heartfelt promo about how he's had issues with the Chicago area. I wonder why that is, Mike.
Yeah.
Come on, Aaron. Tell us why you've had issues with the Chicago area. I'm just going to say this. If you happen to watch the... if you happen to watch the show, you'll see that Froebel is actually going back, you know, heckling somebody in the crowd. That somebody was a friend of the show, J.B. Rowe.
Oh, goodness.
He called him a scumbag. He just he yelled at him that he was a scumbag for using a kid as a prop to try to, you know, get sympathy, you know, over, you know, the fact that Chicago rejected him last year for, you know, being, you know, party to what he was party to. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but, you know, still, you know, fuck him. With that being said, so the clusterfuck with the luchadors.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the luchadors in this five-way match, three of them are contracted. Two of them have worked or will be working with AAA. The contracted ones, of course, being Drago, Aerostar, and Black Taurus. Rey Horus is now working AAA. And Gringo Loco, local favorite, has worked AAA. Well, originally in that match was once in future Fantastica Mania participant Templario.
Oh, goodness.
So, apparently Warrior Wrestling really isn't too knowledgeable about the many and varied politics involved with Lucha Libre. So, CML said, no, he's not going to be in that match. So they put him into another match, which was supposed to be a four-way for the Impact X Division title involving Ace Austin, Blake Christian, and Carlos Romo. And then CML also said, no, you can't do that either because we have no working relationship with Impact. Well, then Ace Austin ended up angling it so he didn't bring the belt with him because of what happened the previous weekend in Logan Square when Walter's car got broken into when he was working Evolve in Logan Square.
Right.
And the NXT UK title got jacked out of his car.
Right, yeah, and even his gear, too, because I remember hearing Walter basically just wrestled in, like, I think, like, some sort of briefs and no boots whatsoever and still apparently delivered a good match because that's Walter.
Yeah,
so.
But, I mean, so it ended up, yeah, it was just a mess. So, in the end, Templario beat Jake Lander in the opening match.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not to say there was a dark match too that had indie favorite Donovan Danhausen, but I didn't get to see that match, nor did I see the Templario match.
Love that Danhausen, folks. Love that Danhausen. But simple as that.
The Lucha 5-Way was great. Also, El Fantasmo fell to Warrior Wrestling Champion, Brian Cage, because after all, he's not a man; he is a machine.
He's a machine.
And then also, Lance Archer beat Brian Pillman Jr. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Brian Pillman Jr.'s debut match.
Right, yeah, I do remember you.
Do you remember where I saw his debut match?
I'm trying to remember. You mentioned it was some sort of warehouse. I just don't remember the specific location.
It was in the clubhouse of an apartment complex on the southwest side of Indianapolis.
Sometimes, man, you get a lot of these weird places for people's debut matches. It's apparently a pro wrestling staple.
Yeah. I'm not gonna relive that whole thing, but that absolutely was one of the weirdest shows I've ever been to. But that being said, of course, and again, I mentioned the main event: Ospreay, Romero, and Amazing Red beating the Rascals, Desmond Xavier, Trey Miguel, and Zachary Wentz. That was a great match. That was a great match. Also, the best match of the night, of course, was the whole reason why we went there.
Yeah, of course.
Minoru Suzuki beating Filthy Tom Lawler, and they started off like they were gonna shoot.
What a time!
it was a great match. But yeah, like I say, it was definitely my favorite match of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd was hot. Of course, Minoru Suzuki is treated like a conquering hero in this country.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
It's great, which makes it all the more poignant that they may not be seeing him too much longer, depending on how things go.
Yeah, that's much as an interesting thread to keep your eye on during the course of as we go into 2020 here.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Anyway, so let's go. But let's get into the Road to Tokyo Dome shows. First night, definitely you should see it. That was I watched all three of them. Bell to bell, and they were fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it was just build up.
Yeah, if you have the time to see all three nights, by all means, go for it. If not, check out at least, I would say, night one for sure. I think it was the best of the three. And I would even say, if you can check out anything else, the main event for night three with Liger's final Corbin Hall match is a good one as well. Just for, one really cool thing that they did during that main event, which was CTU Liger showing up for the first time since the 2000s,
what a fucking trip. Yeah. Well, he was the only variation of Liger that hadn't been seen yet.
Yeah, exactly. And
because, we had Kishin Liger, we had Battle Liger, we hadn't had CTU Liger.
And there you go. Yeah, we got him this roundabout.
But lost in all this, you know what else we got? We got Bushi beating Zack Sabre Jr.
Oh, God.
And I marked the fuck out for this.
That was phenomenal. And one fantastic thing to point out, just throughout the entirety of World Tag League and even in this tour, Dangerous Techers are a fantastic team. Like, that is a team that if you want to be a little bit more serious about kind of revitalizing your tag division, these guys should be at the forefront of it for sure.
They were a good team, and there's definitely some bromancing going on between Taiichi and Sabre, which makes me think that if the rumors that Suzuki are going to be is not long for New Japan are true, this is definitely turning into Taiichi Gun or Sabre Gun or something,
something akin to that, definitely. And again, poor Zach, he's been through so much. The British general elections, being beaten by Bushi now, so it's everything is just falling down for him.
Only one of those I'm going to be feeling sorry for him for. Bushi gets absolutely no love in the booking, and so he needed a big moment. And despite getting no love in the booking, Bushi's still over as fuck. with the crowd. I mean, you could see all the Bushi masks and things in the crowd, you know?
Yes, go figure. Los Ingobernables de Japón are, marketable.
Huh.
Who fucking
How
knew?
about that? Yeah, I think there's
All
a
of them.
I think there's another a masked guy being who wears makeup being marketable. Yeah, I think we need to talk to another promotion that we do a podcast about that. But anyway,
Well,
moving
remember,
on.
half of their EVPs are now off Twitter, so we can't quite do that anymore.
Oh, darn.
Shucks.
Anyway,
What a shame. Anyways.
I'm so that means yeah, that's right. I claim the victory over Nick Jackson then.
You went over. There you go. Anyways.
I caught the block from him, but in the end, I toughed it out, you know.
Yeah. Just.
Anyway, yeah, so I will say this, that last bit of, you know, when the snow is falling at Korakuen, what began as a stare down between Okada and Ibushi, which led to, you know, which became a run-in by Jay White
And then a run-in by Naito.
by
And
Naito,
then
yeah.
everybody just. It was a really fun ending segment for building up this double gold title match specifically. They've been doing a good job with these tags in terms of keeping each of the different parties interacting with one another the way that they have. But this ending segment really did in the trick. And to me specifically, I know a lot of people have been sort of down on Okada's whole dismissal of the IC title in general, but when you really think about it from a character perspective, Okada thinks that the heavyweight title is like the pinnacle of the entire company. Why would he need anything else? Like, it plays into like his whole persona much better than I think a lot of people have been giving it credit for.
Oh
And I like
no,
that
I think
going
it totally
into
does. And you know what?
next
Here's the thing, Naito agrees.
year.
But you know, it's just, you know, he as we all know, the relationship between Naito and the Intercontinental title is a little complicated, so to say the
And
least.
Naito could be considered almost to have tsundere tendencies towards that
Yeah,
title.
and let's not forget that Okada kind of got boned by that title at one point too. So,
Yes, so Okada by no means is willing to let that particular title get any shine on his watch if he can help it either.
yeah.
So
Oh yeah.
there is that low key level of hatred from him as well, which again, not a trend that tends to be talked about as much, but it's there
Oh
because
yeah.
two people got boned over from that main event all those years ago. It wasn't
Yep.
just one guy.
And now they're both, you know, featuring in this. So,
Yeah.
actually, let's discuss more of that later with the Wrestle Kingdom preview. But
Yeah, sure thing.
moving on. So yeah, the New Japan year is over. A couple of notes before we get into the Wrestle Kingdom part, the actual Wrestle Kingdom part. You saw the Tokyo Sports Awards, right?
I did see a bit on it. I didn't read too much into it yet. So if you have like the names and winners, by all means,
Well, of
feel free
course, because
to
I
sign
posted it to the blog at strongstylestory.tumblr.com, which of course you
up.
do read daily, right?
Most of the days, yes.
Yeah, you
Yes.
just must have missed this day, yeah. Okay, so you know, they announced the Tokyo Sports Awards for 2019. Of course, these are also heavily worked, so
Yeah.
we one thing to keep in mind. Yeah, Okada came out, you know, the King of the Hill once again, his fourth MVP award
Yeah, it's
for the
nuts.
year. I don't know. I don't know if he was the MVP of New Japan this year, to be honest.
I think the biggest thing that I would say that Tokyo Sports probably considered, it's the fact that he had, while not the main event this year at the Tokyo Dome, he did have a highlight match there. He main evented in Madison Square Garden in New Japan's first really big show outside of their home soil, because Madison Square Garden is Madison Square Garden. We were there for
Yeah.
that. We saw the entire thing, and just And the fact that he's also responsible for kind of, you know, having the title change and beating Jay White right there and then too, and for Onsuyo to get the title, I think that was heavily considered. And then holding the title for the course of the year and having the matches that he's had, including the match between him and Sanada at King of Pro Wrestling, getting voted as best bout of
which is also a suspect call.
That was kind of the odd call for us, because I think most of us agreed that you could have gone with either the G1 match or even the New Japan Cup final, and it would have been a more arguable contender for
I said on the blog that there were four Okada Sonata matches in 2019, which is about maybe two too many. But
yeah, by all means, yep.
But at the same time, yeah, I thought that the New Japan Cup match was a lot better than the King of Pro Wrestling match. I don't know why they picked. Was it just because it was fresh on their minds? Because it has to be the only reasonable thing about it.
Yeah, that would be my only explanation for that as well.
Yeah, if you had to pick that, then, I mean, if you had to pick an Okada Sonata match, go with the New Japan Cup match, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. As far as the MVP, well, I mean, you know my opinion on who has been the best wrestler in New Japan in 2019. We'll discuss that on Side B. But MVP does not mean the best. It doesn't mean the biggest. It means the most valuable. Like, who brought the most to this promotion? Do we really think Okada did that? I mean, did he really raise the stakes for New Japan?
I think it could be argued within Japan that people do view Okada as somebody who does that by being the champion, by being in all of the adverts, by being the golden goose of the company. So yeah. I could see how they would go, but
there's four other people who are the faces of the company.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Definitely. You know,
Tanahashi, Ibushi, mm-hmm. Naito, and Jay White.
Yeah.
You know?
Any of those could have been choices that they made for that award that I think would have been deserving of it as well, definitely.
And Ibushi did win an award. He won the Technique Award.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But, so he's got that.
Yeah, but I will congratulate Okada for winning the MVP. He is now tied in the all-time ranks for the MVP,
mm-hmm.
tied with Genichiro Tenryu,
yeah,
and the greatest of all time, Keiji Muto.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who holds the most?
I'm trying to think whether that would be Shinya Hashimoto?
As the Tokyo Sports MVP?
That's my guess.
That would be incorrect.
Okay.
At six MVP awards?
Is it Misawa?
Antonio Inoki.
Oh, wow, it's Inoki. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so he's getting close. Although, yeah, looking at the awards again, it is nice, just even though we don't cover these companies, it was nice to see Kento Miyahara getting outstanding performance and then Kaito Kitomiya getting a nod too for Fighting Spirit as well. So,
for the third year in a row, the best tag team, I fully agree with this, the best tag team, Violence Giant, which is
between Suwama and Shuji Ishikawa. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that
what
one's
a fucking
good.
Team.
They are good. The Women's Wrestling Grand Prize, another Bushiroad employee, Mayu Iwatani.
Yep.
And then best newcomer. This is New Japan adjacent because he's the son of Super Strong Machine, Junji Hirata. This is Strong Machine J, rookie out of Dragon Gate.
Yeah, he's been working Dragon Gate there for a little while now, along with the rest of the machines. Another two machines, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one because he's, I guess from that perspective, too, working within Dragon Gate, I think he's won their, I don't remember the exact name of their trios titles, but I believe he won that with the other two machines there a while back.
Is that Open the Triangle Gate, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dragon Gate.
I think he was holding those for a little while, so.
Yeah. In more Okada news, did you see the announcement?
Yes.
That he is mm-hmm. to be one of the 44 runners of the Olympic torch relay as it goes through Aichi Prefecture,
which
on
is his
April
hometown.
April 6th and April 7th. Well, yeah, his hometown Anjo is in Aichi. So that's why, and he's a big name, which of course I love seeing all the folk on Twitter absolutely missing the fucking point of him running the torch through Aichi. Oh, well, if he's not champion, does Ibushi or Naito get to run it? Jesus
No.
Christ. No, because they're not from Aichi.
It's like it's like that specifically there because he is a hometown boy and a very well-known professional wrestler in that regard.
Yeah, I mean,
Of course, all
yeah, you fools. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's champion. It has everything to do with the fact that he's from Aichi. He's not.
And
He's.
not
It's
just
not like he's lighting. It's not like he's going to the opening ceremony and lighting the torch. He's running it through his city, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. It, just like Keiji Muto's running it through his through a specific area there as well too. Like
That's
he's
correct.
getting
He
enough
is.
to do that
Yes.
as well. So,
Wow. Boy, I can't imagine with his knees.
I'm sure it'll just be a nice light jog for him there for a little while,
Is he gonna?
talking to games.
Is he gonna blade halfway through too?
I'm not sure, but I do hope that whoever hands him the torch that he gets to at least miss them. That would be phenomenal.
That would be the greatest. Keiji Muto, yeah, taking the torch and then just missing him.
Then just starts briskly walking away from the scene. Could you imagine? Just
Do you remember when Great Muta had to spit his mist to set a fire out in a WCW cage match?
my
Because
God.
some special effect went wrong and something caught fire. So you just see him
He's
sitting at
just
the
like,
top
well,
missing the fire out.
just like, all right then.
God bless Keiji Muto, my favorite of all time, my absolute favorite of all time. One last thing before we get to Wrestle Kingdom. In news about Young Lions, since there's no New Japan on New Year's Day, you all can tune in to CMLL's New Year's Day show at Arena Mexico, where you will see a hair versus hair match in the main event between upcoming Fantastica Mania participant Dolce Gardenia. And one Hirai Kawato.
Oh, goodness. In terms of the Kawato's getting to do Luchas de Apuestas. What
Yeah,
a
he's
time.
getting his hair. He This is usually the sign that he's gonna be wrapping up soon. Is usually
Yeah,
when they do
see.
that. Because remember, Hiromu and for that matter, El Desperado, both had lost their masks and got their head shaved.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, as part of their hazing that they have to go through in CMLL.
It's called tradition, Jeff. God.
But yeah, Dolce Gardenia, since he's coming over for Fantastica Mania, I don't think we're going to see him with his head shaved. So
Yeah,
I,
I think that's a good bet to take.
yeah. Now, keep in mind, Kawato still has a title too that hasn't been defended since he won it. Because he was
Goodness,
out
yeah.
sick or whatever it was. But yeah, so Kawato's gonna be
One,
losing. He's gonna be losing
yeah.
that blue lettuce of his coming up.
What, yeah, one day we'll know exactly what happened to Kawada during all those months.
But
Someday.
I still wanna know what the hell happened to Oka.
Yeah, that's also another mystery right there.
Yeah. So, New Year's Day, if you got nothing else going on, after the football matches and the bowl games, you can
Check that out,
check
yeah.
out go to Arena Mexico. There's also a mask versus mask match on that show, and some sort of title tournament ender too. But I think I think the participants are still TBD on that. But the mask match will be it's with now, mind you. Like the big guys are not going to be on this show, so
Yeah.
it's going to be like so the mask match is Principe Diamante and Espiritu Negro, they're opening guys,
Gotcha.
but
It's one of those where there's the stakes are at least high enough to where it should at least be interesting, even if it's not specifically some of the big main eventers for
yeah,
it. But
by the way,
it's something to do during New Year's.
All of this reminds me of the fact that I really miss the Lionsgate shows, and actually, I'll go through that in on side B too.
Side B, cool.
So, hey, let's get to this. It's all come to this. It's all come to Wrestle Kingdom 14. Two nights of Wrestle Kingdom 14 in the Tokyo Dome. Saturday, January the 4th. Sunday, January the 5th. My ass will be waking up early both days.
Yep, definitely. It's a weekend, so this is as good of a time to do that as any. And something that I do normally for like the other big shows that they have on weekends like this, I'm usually still up and at it on my side of defense. So yeah, that's definitely something we're going to be doing here.
The fact is that, you know, last year, of course, we declined to get up for this. Because
you did, I didn't.
Oh, okay. Well, fine, you be that way. I thought we were. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I didn't take the day off of work or any of that. It was just, yeah, no. That, on paper, that card was trash. It turns out it was a good card.
Yeah. We definitely underestimated that card on paper for sure.
And it wasn't like we didn't have reasons to.
True.
I will say that. I just remember around this time last year, we were talking as if, oh, boy, I don't even know if we're going to make it to the year 4 anniversary.
And then,
you know?
And then this year delivers in more ways than any of us were expecting. But I think that's something we can cover a little bit more.
Side B. Let's get to the actual show. Of course, you know, the centerpiece of this is the double gold dash that was started with a flippant remark by Naito during the New Beginning, and then, well, it boomed,
mm-hmm.
and it became the story. It became the storyline of the whole year. You know, and it's amazing how many of these year long storylines have been started by Naito.
Yeah, quite
because
a few of them.
The year long storyline with him and Jericho started at New Year Dash. You know, what ended up becoming Naito versus Okada in the main event. That started with just, you know, with a Naito match. You know, they were about to tie up, and then he just all of a sudden turns to Okada on commentary and just spits at him. It's like, boom. I was like, when that happened, I was like, oh, yeah, this is your Wrestle Kingdom main event. And lo and behold, it was, you know?
Mm-hmm. Just a lot of different things that came together at the right, not so much the right time, but they have set things up fairly well in that regard. So,
and I'm going to point out, I don't think this could have come together as well as it has with the double gold dash if it wasn't for the fact that Kota Ibushi signed full time.
Yeah,
if that
definitely
didn't happen,
so.
I don't think this could have fallen together as well as it has. You know.
Mm-hmm. I do think that somebody like Ibushi was essential to making this all come together as well, because you, for something like that, and given the two titles, you need four main eventers, basically. And with Kenny Omega basically going overseas at this point to start a new company with a couple of other guys, one of those slots was empty, and somebody needed to step up for that. So Ibushi signing full-time the way that he did post-Wrestle Kingdom and going, here for the long haul. Yeah, congrats. That's your main eventer slot filled out right there.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, it fell together so well, so well. I mean, there's a lot more storylines going on, too. We can go down a lot of these when we talk about the actual matches, which we're actually going to do now, because we have two cards worth of matches to go down. So, first of all, there are two, they call them dark matches. If they're actually going to be shown on NJPW World, they're not dark matches, they're just pre-show.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to have Battle of Young Lions as GBH being, you know, Togi Makabe and Tomoki Honma, Yota Tsuji and Yuya Uemura, going up against Toei Hanare and the LA Dojo Young Lions of Alex Coughlin, Clark Connors, and Carl Fredericks. Which, you know, that'll be what they are, you know?
Should be fun. A nice little bit of Young Lion on Young Lion kind of action. I'm a fan of it.
Yep. And then, the second pre-show match on the 4th, my God, this, you know, there was a time when this would have been a headlining match. But it's mm-hmm. it's Nagata Nakanishi against Tenkoji, you know, Tenzan and Kojima.
Dad on dad violence is something I'm completely here for, and these four dads are going to deliver.
That like I said, that would have been That would have been a headlining dome match.
Yeah, definitely so.
Of a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you go back in time, and if you saw that listed as the main event, you'd be like, yeah, I completely buy that. Let's do this.
It just shows how long we've been watching New Japan. Huh?
Good Lord.
Yeah. All right, let's go down the main card here. We have the first. Okay, I'm starting to well up even thinking about this. The first of the retirement matches for Jushin Thunder Liger. We've actually already talked about this earlier, but let's reiterate this. Jushin Liger teaming with Tatsumi Fujinami, Great Sasuke, and Tiger Mask 4 with, as their quarterman, El Samurai.
Yeah.
Going up a team of other former NJPW junior greats and a current one. Naoki Sano, Shinjiro Otani, the criminally underrated Tatsuhiro Takaiwa, and Ryusuke Taguchi in their corner, Kuniaki Kobayashi.
Again, it's one of those things where we talk about an assemblance of absolute legends, past and even present, because I definitely put Taguchi on that list of somebody who is going to be considered to be like criminally underrated for the next couple of years, even though he's been like a fantastic junior heavyweight for them for a very long time now.
Well, I think a lot of that is just because he works comedy quite a lot. I mean,
true.
So he's underrated, but not in exactly in the same way that Tatsuhiro Takaiwa, I think, is underrated.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, understandably so, definitely.
Yeah, but this is again. I'm kind of welling up. Yeah, well, I say that. You know?
It's just hard to believe at this point that we're going to be in 2020 in a world without Jushin Thunder Liger as an active pro wrestler.
We will be in a post Jushin Thunder Liger world. I don't know if we're ready for this.
I don't think we are, honestly, because I can even think back as far as 2016 when we were still in the early years of the show, and when I was talking to you specifically about going to Battle of Los Angeles in 2016 just because I wanted to see Liger in person, because, hey, you never know when he might just decide to hang it up. And then this is long before, you know, all the New Japan and America shows that we've had since. But
yeah.
Thinking about it now, it's kind of just like, wow, that's something that I at least can say that I got to do before he retired. I just feel bad for anyone who's not going to get that experience of seeing him in person, because that is a once in a lifetime kind of performer. And I say that with no semblance of like bias or homerism in any way, shape, or form. Just Jushin Thunder Liger is special.
Yeah, I mean, we will not see his likes again. I don't. And I'm sure we're going to take up a lot of time next. In episode 61, we'll go into Liger a little bit more, because we'll have I think we'll have Cubs with us then. Because
it'll be Fantastic Mania. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our yearly post Wrestle Kingdom show with Cubs.
Mm-hmm. There
shout
we
out,
go.
Shout out to Cubs fan. The second match, Sanada, Evil, Shingo, and Bushi versus Zack Sabre Jr., Minoru Suzuki, Taichi, and El Desperado. I'm going to put it out there that it is absolutely criminal that five of the participants in this match do not have something more substantial going on for Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate, especially with the two nights. With the two nights,
yeah,
portion, especially.
And let's throw in Tomohiro Ishii in there too.
Mm-hmm.
It is shocking and scandalous that Evil, Shingo, Suzuki, Taichi, and even El Desperado, which maybe I can somewhat understand El Desperado because he just came back.
Yeah, he's still on the process of, you know, getting himself fully back from that injury with his jaw from a couple months ago.
But Taichi doesn't have something substantial going on. He's been one of the stories of 2019.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, and I do think, to be honest, something like this, I think will kind of fuel the fire for him a little bit more going into 2020, which should ideally translate into something big for him come 2021 with Wrestle Kingdom. So that's my hope anyway.
Well, maybe. We'll see. It's just, again, I just think it's scandalous that they don't have something more substantial going on. But anyway. Third main show match, Hirooki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, Toriano, and Yoshihashi. It gets a Bullet Club tandem of Kenta, Bad Luck Fale, Yujiro Takahashi, and Chase Owens. I just don't care about this match at all.
I think this is more just so the specific holdover for the Never Open Way title match that we're going to be seeing on the next night between
I mean, I just so. As such, I don't care about this. You know, I don't care. It ultimately means nothing. You know,
It'll be a decent holdover, but that's basically the gist of it right there. But from there, we do move on into 5 straight title matches.
Yep. So. The first one, the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team titles, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, the Gorillas of Destiny. They've held these titles pretty much the entire year up against Finn Juice, Juice Robinson, and David Finley Jr. Do you think Finn Juice get the rub here?
I don't know. I'm legitimately curious to see how they do this one.
Because if you look down the lineups for the next night, it's ironic we keep talking about the double gold dash because low-key Juice Robinson potentially will be...
Could also be a double champion holder himself. Yeah, definitely.
And I don't think anybody has mentioned this.
Yeah, it's been something that it's been on my mind, but I'm just like, are they going to go through with this? Can they go through with this?
We're definitely going to get at least one double title holder. Maybe we'll get two.
Who knows?
It's the theme of the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why not? It would work.
Mm-hmm. It is very interesting because obviously the title that we're talking about is the next title down the card here, which is going to be a Texas Death Match for the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight Championship between the champion Lance Archer and John Moxley, the man who never lost the title to begin with. A typhoon just really got in the way of him defending it. So,
yeah,
you know.
Even Mox couldn't hit a Death Rider on the typhoon. So the Texas Death Match, of course, will be no pinfalls, no countouts, no DQ. It is, you know, it is submission or knockout only. So I guess Moxley just needs to figure out how many Death Riders he needs to hit.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. How many tables he needs to put Lance Archer through before it all finally comes together there.
Yeah, let's not forget who has the death match bona fides here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I think Moxley has to win this because of the next night, and there's a storyline that's been left dangling because of the typhoon.
Yeah, I don't think it would hurt Archer by any means in terms of losing the title this way, because he'll still be somebody who will be in contention for it in the future at any given point that he wants to. But
yeah. No, I agree. I just, yeah, it has to be Moxley that it just has to be because the storyline dictates it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things. This is going to be one of the few opportunities that I think New Japan will have within 2020 to have John Moxley booked. So you might as well take advantage of it by having him participate in both nights of Wrestle Kingdom. So.
Yeah, I mean,
You mentioned, the unfinished business with Juice Robinson as well is a big factor in this too.
Yeah. Oh, huge, yeah. Factor. No. I'm fully going Moxley in this match. So, the quarter main event, I guess. IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. Will Ospreay versus our boy Hiromu Takahashi. Boy, they have basically all but telegraphed that Hiromu's going over, haven't they?
It's true, but I've liked the way that they've done it, at least, because you've gotten to see certain things in terms of Hiromu's path from a story perspective, not being as slam dunk bona fide as it should be under the eyes of somebody who might just be watching it casually. You've gotten Ospreay to be more like himself, which, by the way, is a complete fucking dick.
He's actually done very well being the heel in this build-up, which is how it should be. Hiromu should be the babyface in this.
Yeah, and also in general, Ospreay has been a better heel, I feel, in just about every company that he's gone to, be it his stuff with Progress or even whatever smaller appearances he has done elsewhere. I think he works better as a heel than he does as a babyface.
Was it What Culture where he was the Swords of Essex with someone?
Yes, with Paul Robinson. Yeah, and he did that in Progress too with Robinson, since that's one of his actual real life friends. So
right, okay, yeah. So I mean, yeah, we've seen the heel Ospreay before. Even outside of Twitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
anything, he's better at it outside of Twitter than within Twitter, which again says something.
Anyway, so yeah, like I said, they've pretty much all but telegraphed Hiromu going over.
Still, should be a fantastic match between the two. They have not had bad matches against each other during their time wrestling, so this should be another classic to add on to that.
No, I agree. I just can't wait for Hiromu to jump up from the Tokyo Dome stage like he does, you know?
Oh, God, yeah, that should be great. It makes me wonder, how crazy that entrance is going to be in terms of not only Hiromu being Hiromu, but if they'll add all the other things, like the cats being all over the place or whatever else could happen. It's Hiromu. Anything's possible with him at this point.
I totally agree, and it should be a great one. The next match, I have anxiety about.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's going to be like a full 25 to 30 minutes where we're just panicking at everything and anything. And again, I think that is the beauty of Tetsuya Naito in a way in which, if you followed his story for as long as possible, you have that particular anxiety, because history has told us that Tetsuya Naito doesn't really win in big matches. And when you have somebody like Jay White, somebody who is as good of an antagonist as Jay White has become within the realms of New Japan Pro Wrestling, where just about anything that he said, he's proven, he's done it. It just mounts to tension like 100-fold at this point with this first of the two matches leading into the gold, double gold into the fifth. So,
but I mean, how can they not go through it, Naito, at least being in that main event, because this was his story the whole way? How can they? I mean, that's what logic would tell you. This is the payoff that you need to go with.
Yeah.
But yeah, with them being so high on Jay White, but I mean, again, he's held the two biggest titles in the calendar year of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's not like a loss by Jay is going to bury him,
Yeah, it's one of the situations too where I do feel that, from a company perspective, putting all four of your guys in this position, all four guys could feasibly win this. I do sincerely believe that if any of these four guys walk out with the two titles, you can do something with it for story purposes within the future. I just do feel that with Tetsuya Naito specifically, if you don't take your shot at him this year, there is no more shots. That window was closed permanently at this point.
Yeah, so and, if nothing else, Naito has to win this match.
Mm-hmm. I do feel it is a circumstance where anybody of these four could win it, and they could work the stories around it and still do something that I think is beneficial to the company's bottom line and their influence overall. But I do think that from performance standpoints, nobody needs this more than Tetsuya Naito at this point.
Well, and also, let's look at it this way. Of Jay White and Tetsuya Naito, who do you think is going to bring more walk-up business to the Tokyo Dome the next day?
Yeah, that's exactly the other thing that comes to mind as well, too. I do think that there is enough of an investment at this point to Naito at least make it to the fifth.
Because I just want to point out that while Wrestle Kingdom 13 had a higher attendance than Wrestle Kingdom 12,
mm-hmm.
the jump in attendance from Wrestle Kingdom 11 to Wrestle Kingdom 12, and Wrestle was higher. It was a higher percentage jump than the one from Wrestle Kingdom 12 to Wrestle Kingdom 13. You know, there were 2,000 odd more people at Wrestle Kingdom 13, but the percentage of the jump was not as high.
Yeah,
And
that's.
and 12 was the one that Naito main evented. And let's, not forget, Naito semi-main evented, last year against
Yes.
Jericho, and now he's doing it again. But I yeah. Logic and everything dictates it has to be Tetsuya Naito. It has to be. At least walking in to be the champion on the fifth,
Yeah.
to be in that main event on the fifth. It has to be.
Yeah,
Now,
I do agree with that, but we'll see where it goes. I will be very nervous throughout the entirety of it, but yeah, we'll see
oh
where it
yeah,
goes.
I'm gonna be losing my shit and gonna take everything I have to not squeal at everything when, I also have, we'll have, sleeping people in the
Yeah,
house.
for sure.
But then the main event, and this was a good call for the main event. This
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
actually was a good call for the main event. The IWGP Heavyweight Championship between the champion for most of the year, Kazuchika Okada, against G1 Climax winner Kota Ibushi. Okay, so here's my question. We know that these two are capable of having a good match with each other. Who would you rather see going up against Naito on January the 5th? What's going to be the better matchup between for Naito?
Okay, this one might catch a couple people off guard, but I'll put it this in two ways. If you want the best match possible at the fifth, I do think that you go with Naito and Ibushi.
Yes.
But I
Okay.
think if you want the most important match on the fifth, and my personal preference, actually, you put in Okada against Naito. And I'll explain why. To me in particular, I just think that if the breakdown is to have Tetsuya Naito finally fulfilling his destino of being a double champion, I don't want it to be at the expense of a 24-hour heavyweight championship reign by Kota Ibushi. I think Kota Ibushi deserves much better if he's going to get the heavyweight title somewhere down the line, and I do think that is going to happen sometime in 2020. You need to let him have a little bit of time with the title rather than just 24 hours. I think when you consider the lineage and the history of IWGP Heavyweight Champions, this is the one guy who least deserves a 24-hour reign, especially considering some of the guys who have held that title during some of the darker days of the company and that they shouldn't have held it for anywhere near as long as they did, kind of thing. So. And I think to me as well, the other thing is with Okada and Naito, there's still that bit of unfinished business from Wrestle Kingdom 12 where, yes, Naito main evented, but he made one very crucial mistake that night that basically allowed Okada to slam dunk his way in the history books with the longest reign, the most defenses, and just all that other stuff. I think that for finality on Naito's perspective, he needs to beat the guy who's beaten him and two dome matches, one that should have been a main event but wasn't, and one that was a main event. So just finality, basically, on that perspective.
Okay, I kind of see where you're coming from on this, right? You make a good case. However, I also think that the Wrestle Kingdom 12 main event, the point of that was that Naito didn't want to win the title. He wanted his main event. That
Yeah.
he that he that
That's
he
fair.
that he was owed and got denied.
Yeah,
And he
that's
got it.
makes sense as well.
Remember, yeah, he got it. Because he didn't grouse and mope about not winning the heavyweight title for a year. Not because, well, let's face it, his fans did it for him,
Yeah.
including us. Here's my biggest concern about this is that in singles matches, and we've had plenty of examples of this, Okada and Naito just do not have the chemistry.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before too, that from.
There's the only one that Okada really has any chemistry with in in the ring from Los Ingobernables is evil, and we only got one match between them this year.
True.
You know? And plus, there has been a storyline this whole year between Naito and Ibushi, too, lest we forget.
Yeah, definitely so.
And I'm sure Ibushi kind of wants to get his own back from getting, you know, Dragon Suplex onto, you know, his fucking skull on the apron.
This is true.
I think there is just as much storyline between between Ibushi and Naito as there is Okada and Naito.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I think
and I understand the potential ignominy of Ibushi being a 24-hour IWGP champion, but there's also the potential ignominy of Naito being a 24-hour IWGP Intercontinental champion too.
Yeah, this is true.
So I don't know. Either way, we're gonna have a record low, you know, a record short title reign. But ironically, in which one that there will actually be a defense.
Yeah.
Unlike, you know, like Chono's.
Yeah, this
is
true.
He never got to have his defense, you know?
Yeah, Chono, because it was what, injury that he had to forfeit the title
for,
right?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, his neck got fucked up again. So,
goodness.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I'm going to say Ibushi. Because I think that's, I also think that that's a draw. I think Ibushi versus Naito, main eventing the Dome, is a draw.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a draw for walk-up business. I think that's the way you got to go. And besides which, there's a bigger story right now between Okada and Jay White, still to this day, you know?
Yeah, which, for the course of night two, that there is going to be a match mentioned between the two losers of that night one event, but that they mentioned specifically will have ramifications for what comes next in 2020, which means regardless, you know, the two losers of that first night are still going to be involved heavily into 2020's title pictures. So
keep that in mind. Four of these guys are the faces of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And the fifth one has his own match, which we're going to get to. So now we go to the unprecedented second night of Wrestle Kingdom in 2020, January the 5th. It starts out with another pre-show match, a return of the gauntlet for the never openweight six-man comedy titles.
Indeed, which, by the way, I will give those particular titles credit this year around because only one team's held them throughout the entirety of the year.
Yeah, but they've only defended them four times.
True, but at the same time, at the very least, it hasn't been the comedic hot potatoing of it for once, so I can appreciate it in that regard, at least.
Well, that much is true. That much is true. One team has held them, but, I mean, it's only been four defenses.
Mm.
Like, almost to the point where you almost forgot that they were around.
You know? That's also a fair statement to make. Definitely.
So, once again, five different teams, you know, all of the units getting involved here. And that's that's something we can talk about on side B too. But anyway, so the challengers to Togi Makabe, Toriano, and Ryusuke Taguchi will be, first off, the Chaos team of Tomohiro Ishii, Yoshihashi, Robbie Eagles. Again, can I reiterate my thesis that, well, actually, no, I'll reiterate it after I do the rest of the teams. For Los Ingobernables, we have Evil, Shingo, and Bushi. Suzuki-Gun presents Taichi, El Desperado, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru. And then finally, the Bullet Club brings us Balak Fale, Yujiro Takahashi, and Chase Owens. I think I can safely say that they will not be winning.
Yeah, that's a good bet right there, I'd say.
Let me once again reiterate my thesis that Evil, Shingo, Taichi, and Ishii being in a pre-show gauntlet on Wrestle Kingdom is an absolute waste given that they had a very good years.
Yeah, I agreed.
I mean, I even managed to get back onto the Tomohiro Ishii train, if you recall.
Yeah, I know you were out of it for quite some time there initially,
I
just
was out
because
of it.
you.
G1 got me back on it, you know?
Yeah, the G1s are like, just when I thought I was out, they pull
Pull me
me
back.
back in.
But yeah, I again, it is a scandalous waste of their time. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So we move on to, oh my God. I was willing up before, I might be willing up now. Jushin Thunder Liger's final match as an active pro wrestler. Of course, the next night at New Year Dash from Oto
Will be the
Ward will
ceremony, yeah.
be his retirement ceremony. I might lose my shit at that. I might lose it. His final match is a tag match, sadly, but Jushin Liger and Naoki Sano once again against the possible and probable IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion Hiromu Takahashi and the newly rechristened Ryu Lee.
And out of all the things that I expected for Liger's retirement match, the idea of generational rivals versus generational
Generational
rivals was
rivals.
not something I saw coming.
How about this? The potential of the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion being in his final match.
Yeah, no kidding. Whew.
Yeah, potentially. Which, if they make the right call, they will do that.
Just very, very interesting turn of events when that got announced the first, but I'm excited for it. I'm really stoked to not only see just, kind of enjoy Liger's last match for what it is, to see Naoki Sano doing stuff in that regard as well too, but to also see basically two Ingobernables teaming together, because as we'll get to in
Well,
Side
one of
B,
them.
boy, that's, yeah, that's a thread.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We do need to mention that, don't we?
Yep.
Yeah. So there are layers upon layers in this match. So which is, I mean, I guess it's great. Yeah, this is how Liger's gonna go out, you know. But all right. We have our first title match of the evening. The IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. Taiji Ishimori and El Fantasmo defending against the Super Junior Tag League winners, Roppongi 3K, Sho and Yo. I mean, they gotta go Sho and Yo on this.
I'm thinking it's Roppongi 3K basically making their marks and just establishing themselves as undisputedly like the one of the best junior heavy teams of this particular deck of kind of the end of the decade and sort of begin the new one
Yeah,
type of thing.
for
So
sure.
it'll be fun though. It's nice to see Taiji Ishimori getting another big dome match, 2 years running now. So.
It is good. It is good. I agree. The next match, the RevPro Undisputed British Heavyweight Championship, Zack Sabre Jr. defending against Sonata. Sonata, of course, was out injured on the final New Japan show. Don't know still the severity of said injury, or if it was just a knock or what have you. So there may be a potential question mark on this match.
We'll see. It seems like he just got knocked out considerably there, and he might be a little swollen from just the impact on the cheek, but it's going to be interesting to see how they play around that. I do think that if the match does go through, that given all the times in which these guys have fought each other, Zack has submitted Sonata a couple times. Sonata has pinned Zack a couple of times, but he hasn't submitted him, as Zack has so very inherently pointed out. So that's a nice little red herring to consider there
Yeah,
as to what the result of the match might be.
that's true. That's true. So,
And again, Zack Sabre Jr. losing his marbles at this point is not uncommon, so adding another notch to that list is
true
something
that.
we can very much see.
True that. The next match, dependent on who wins between Lance Archer and Jon Moxley, but it is an IWGP U.S. Heavyweight Championship match. You know what? We may have several. Okay, so not only might we have two double champions out of this Wrestle Kingdom, we may have two 24-hour title reigns.
Yeah, this is true. And this is the match I would say where that's the most likely thing to happen, just because, as we mentioned already quite a few times throughout this year, Juice Robinson's kind of stop-and-go push has been one of the more frustrating trends we've seen throughout 2019. So to see him start 2020 with a bang like this and being a guy holding two titles would actually be pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
I would be okay with that.
Yeah, and again, it has to be Moxley that goes into this match. It has to be, because
it's the rubber match.
It's the rubber. Yeah, it'll be the rubber match between them. They could do another Archer Juice match down the
road.
And
like New Beginning probably would be where I would think we would see that.
Oh shit, that's something we didn't talk about. There's more New Beginning USA shows coming.
Yes, indeed.
We'll touch on that briefly after this.
Yes.
But yeah, those are back. But okay, continuing. The never open weight championship, Kenta against Hirooki Goto. Let's just face it, this is becoming the Hirooki Goto Wrestle Kingdom belt.
Yeah, a part of me thinks that seems to be the way in which they're trending towards, but I actually would be fine with seeing Kenta retain here just to continue his full-fledged dickery towards everyone and everything.
Well,
like, it looks good with that title, to be honest.
And I feel that, but this is also, you know, the vengeance for the, you know, the name and honor of Katsuyori Shibata too.
Which, that's a trend there for sure.
Yeah,
they probably will hit on. So,
and by the way, can I just say thank you, Jesus, that they did not decide to book Shibata into a match on this show.
Yeah, I just don't think he was ever going to get cleared by any sane doctor chance.
I can still see him maybe doing like a couple, like a spot or two, but yeah, just no, he does not need to be wrestling again, you know? And that's all I'm going to say on that.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, the loser of Okada versus Ibushi versus the loser of Jay White and Tetsuya Naito. So therefore, as far as I'm concerned, this is Kazuchika Okada versus Jay White, as far as I'm concerned.
That's what I might be thinking as well, that it's either that or it's Okada, as mentioned already, it's going to be possibly, if they decide to go the Naito Okada route, where it's Ibushi, Jay White, where it's a rematch of the G1 final. So I think you still have you could have a couple of slam dunk matches either way between the loser side. And again, it probably has New Beginning ramifications at this point. So there's that to consider.
The semi-main event I have concerns with, and that would be Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Chris Jericho. I have concerns.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hear him.
My concern is that this is going to be some sort of fuck finish, or Jericho's going to go over Tanahashi, because Jericho is, of course, Le Champion in another company. And the politics are going to get involved here.
I would hope not, but again, it is very much a different environment to consider, where Jericho was, we mentioned prior to all of this, last year around, he was a freelancer. AEW was just an idea on somebody else's minds, and it wasn't, you know, hadn't come to fruition yet. And now a year later, where it is an established company that has already fucked around with certain things, like, you know, Jon Moxley not being able to wrestle in night one of the G1 Climax tournament in Dallas, which we touched on quite a few months ago. It does make me wonder specifically if...
Well, but keep in mind, when this match was booked, AEW was an existing company. And you know, therefore, that's why I think we had, you know, the roll-up finish at Dominion. so that, it was a flash roll up rather than, Jericho decisively eating Rainmaker.
I agree with that. So
Because,
it's.
because they were still, oh, well, he's going to be in our championship match, coming
Yeah, now
up.
that he is the champion himself, yeah, there are some rooms for concern. I do think that if it comes down to that, I think Tana is good about doing business regardless and just will try his best to work with what he's given. But I do hope that the politics side of the fence doesn't play a hand in this particular match, though, our expectations are very little in that regard, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, I have my words. I really hope that Tanahashi goes over because, I mean, they're gonna have to write out Chris Jericho eventually because I don't know how much longer his freelance deal is happening, But I mean, so they have to.
It's a proper concern to have, absolutely.
So yeah, I like I said, I have some concern. I think the match will be okay. I mean. Jericho's match with Naito was one of my favorites of this year. His match with Okada was not. But I'll go so far as to say that might have been one of the worst New Japan matches of the year was Jericho and Okada.
And it felt the post-match stuff fell kind of flat for the audience too, which was unfortunate. So it's
Yeah.
like if
Well,
you add all of
until
that,
Tanahashi got
it's
involved, and then we got the Bakahashi promo,
yeah.
Because the crowd definitely reacted to that,
Just one of those things where we'll keep our eyes open on it and see what happens, and hopefully it's Tana getting another nice moment, because at this point he's getting up there in age too, man. Like, gotta consider circumstances with that
Yeah, Tanahashi may not be getting too many of these, but of course we said this 2 years ago, and well,
too. Then, well, yeah,
yeah,
man.
and then a lot happened.
Let's just hold our peace accordingly until whenever it's actually all said and done then.
I agree. And then our main event, what it's all been heading to this entire year, the double gold dash, the quasi unification, because they didn't really say that this was gonna be like a unification match.
No, it's just to advertise it as it's belt and belt, the winner walks away with both,
Yeah, it's not gonna be it's not gonna be a Triple Crown type situation here. It's just gonna be but so yeah, the winner of Kazuchika Okada versus Kota Ibushi versus the winner of Jay White versus Tetsuya Naito, that means, and as far as I'm concerned, this is Ibushi and Naito.
I think regardless what happens, what we're hoping for at this point from our personal fandom standpoints is that this is where Naito 2 Belts finally happens.
Yeah, I think we've been pretty open about our feelings on that.
Yeah, very much so, which.
Yeah, I don't think there's really any real way you can say that. Yeah, we're thinking otherwise. But as far as we're concerned, yes, Naito becomes a dual champion, and hopefully that more than makes up for everybody's hurt feelings since Wrestle Kingdom 12.
Yeah, which that, yeah, that in and of itself, that broke a couple of people. We remember that vividly for a little while there. Even we were just like, well, that window's closed. It's done.
Yeah,
It's finished.
it's broken a lot of people. But you know what? Everybody, you know what? But we've been down this road, even this year when everybody said that, oh God, Naito didn't go to the final G1 final. That's it. It's over. It's like, well, then it turned back around. It's like, wait a minute. He is more in it than ever now,
Yeah, definitely so. And I think, contrary to what a lot of people believe, the match with Jay White literally set up the final piece of the story that we needed. He's got to fight from underneath, basically, to get back to this point.
Yeah, he does now. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's been there. The pieces have been there. It's been out in the open this whole time. So, and we're here now, so.
I'm excited though, like in terms of outside of a few small bits where we're going, why do these particular guys don't have like a featured match on this particular 2 nights of worth of cards? Overall, I do think it's going to be a really fun Wrestle Kingdom weekend for For sure.
Yeah, oh
We'll
yeah.
definitely get a lot of big moments out of it, which is, it'll set up everything for the next year, which, yep, that's
Yeah,
going to be.
and well, as we close the door on one era and begin a new decade.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's yeah, I mean, we're closing the door on one era, of course, with Jushin Liger. We'll be living in a post-Liger world, possibly a post-Suzuki in New Japan world too.
Yeah,
We
that.
don't know. And allegedly, let's not forget, Harold May allegedly is walking away too, but
Yeah,
we haven't heard
we don't
shit
know for
about,
sure for that.
yeah, we haven't heard anything about either of them. And let's not forget, it was one guy reporting this.
It's one of the situations where all we've heard were just the rumors on that, and it's been something on the mind. I think the biggest part out of all of this is that January 6th is going to answer a lot more questions than I think anybody's expecting for not just 2020, but for the years ahead at this
Yeah.
point,
Oh no,
if they're going to
I
be doing.
agree. Yeah, I mean, New Year Dash is gonna definitely. Yeah, it's gonna be one to watch. So, on that note, which of course will lead into the New Beginning and the New Beginning USA eventually, with Fantastica Mania in between. I'm just gonna say New Japan is really kind of tempting fate, doing another New Beginning USA run
Although I do.
during the New Beginning tour.
Yes. Although I will say this, I do appreciate New Japan's own sense of humor for poking fun at themselves, because on that particular announcement that they made about the New Beginning in USA shows, they did put a little note at the ending basically saying, "And just so everybody knows, all of our talent have their visas this time around, so they will
Yeah.
be ready to go."
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a fair thing to say. I mean, and a necessary thing to say given the utter disaster that happened, earlier this year,
Yeah,
and
arguably their lowest moment last year was definitely this the visa snafu with those shows,
well,
because
but at the same time, it really wasn't entirely their fault.
yeah, it definitely was not. It was just basically with the current government within the United States at the moment. Yeah, the situation with visas and stuff is going to be an issue for a lot of people, and it even, we saw it elsewhere in terms of pro wrestling. The whole situation with the Dragon Gate guys not being able to come for Mania Weekend this past year because,
Yeah.
well, visas. So
Yeah.
it's been an ongoing trend, unfortunately, over here.
So, yeah. So, thanks, fascism.
Yep.
But
Of course.
anyway, so that they're doing dates in Tampa, Nashville, Raleigh, North Carolina, Miami, and Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Hotlanta.
Yeah, going through the southeast portion of the fence and gauging that audience there a little bit more now.
Yeah, but yeah, so let's yeah, but we're going to discuss we're going to discuss New Japan of America a little bit here coming up on
Side B,
side
yeah.
B, because I think that's been one definitely one of the stories of the New Japan year that we need to go through. So yeah, I think we're wrapped up for side A on this one. So Chris, do a quick plug in case we can't keep our audience for side B.
Oh God, oh God, yeah, we need to keep your attention. Sorry. You can go ahead and follow me in particular at Brazilian Fury on Twitter and Instagram. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. Nothing too big in particular outside of just doing the podcast with you here for the Pro Wrestling Only Network at the moment. But if other projects come up, I will let you know here.
And of course, you can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel. And of course, the blog still somehow at strongstylestory.tumblr.com, despite everything with Tumblr.
Yeah.
It's still there. And of course, I'm going to plug my other show, Busting Balls, a soccer related podcast, because we do have a holiday edition. That's up there now. So anyway, go ahead and follow that soundcloud.com/busting-balls. And as Chris alluded to, and we've alluded to a couple times, you can also hear the two of us, for the most part, on every Wednesday night, within 90 minutes after AEW Dynamite's done, on a show called Boom Goes the Dynamite. We haven't really discussed it there. Do you know why I call this show Boom Goes the Dynamite and where that sample came from?
I think it's better if you explained it to the audience, Jeff, on the situation.
I know. I was just wondering, did I tell you this?
I think you may have done it in, like, passing very briefly when we talked about doing the very first episode, but that was it.
So, the sample, the phrase was coined on this. This was a some poor student sportscaster on the campus TV station for my alma mater, which is Ball State University. Now, the sample is only like 10 years old. I was long since graduated when this came up. But I mean, the phrase is just perfect, you know. Boom goes the dynamite. I mean, it means nothing, but you know, it became ubiquitous.
It means nothing, but it became its own meme, is basically what you're saying.
In the day before there really were, before memes were really memes, you know, this was like, you know, this was like LiveJournal, MySpace era, you know.
Good Lord, LiveJournal, what a time.
You'd be surprised how long I hung on to my LiveJournal.
I mean, look, I'm not going to hold that against you at this point. It's most people. I wouldn't be surprised if like a lot of people have hung on to their LiveJournals for their life. And just afraid
Chris,
of
I
it.
Am an old. I hang on to things. I've had my Hotmail email address for 20 plus years now. Come on, you know.
Right, I do recall you telling me about this. Yes.
Oh yeah. So anyway, myself, Chris. Sometimes, most of the time, Chris. Sometimes not, but also sometimes a former Strong Style Story co-host, Lawrence O'Brien, joins us for reviewing AEW Dynamite, and we do that every Wednesday after Dynamite, which means on Christmas Day there will not be an episode because there will be no Dynamite to review. You know, there's been a lot of AEW talk since then.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm not feeling compelled to do another show just to talk about that. But
for sure.
So anyway, stick around. Side B will be coming up shortly. You'll want to listen to this as we go through our fourth anniversary of doing this show. So, and we will basically reviewing the year of New Japan Pro Wrestling. So, on behalf of myself and Chris, stick around. And if not, then thanks for listening. We'll see you in a little bit.